CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Man, we've got a busy day ahead for you today. These 2 hours are going to feel like a jam-packed, massive menu of huge breakfast delights. That's what it's going to be. A lot going on. So, we've got Lebang Khosana, and we've got Simpiwe Mtatwa here both with us this morning to keep you company. And hopefully, we're all three going to make you laugh, make you smile, make you think, make you... we don't want to make you cry. I think we'll leave that one out. There's enough in the world to make you cry. We'll try to skip on that one if we can. But there's lots going on. So let's catch up. Let's see what's happening. Mabululuyeyeyo is down in Tsitsikamma somewhere, like the Otter Trail. He's the MC there. He knows all about this running nonsense, which I've always believed is very bad for you. But that's just me. You agree, right?
Good for him.
Do you think so?
I mean, like, he's passionate about it, and he's putting his passion to work, and it's working for him. Isn't that what we all want?
He loves it. He loves this stuff.
He does.
And he'll join us tomorrow to tell us what's actually going on down there, because I think a lot of people are curious about what's happening. I love the way now that we're on supposed level one. And by the way, I didn't even know the president was speaking last week when he came up with this. No one even told me. Huh?
I feel like I also missed it. Like, was anybody actually present for that family meeting?
No. We all just kind of...
I think all we need to get is Twitter updates about what's happening, and we're all good to go.
Well, did you guys feel the WhatsApp outage yesterday? Because people were confused and dazed and panicky, and it just shows you how desperately dependent we are on Mark Zuckerberg.
Dude.
So WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook were down yesterday. Everything else seems to have been working fine. But I finished a meeting at like 5, and then when I came out of the meeting, I checked my phone and I saw, it's taking a long time to connect to WhatsApp. Thought, all right, well, thank God I don't have anything important that I'm expected to do now. But you imagine if you're waiting for someone to give you directions on where to go, or you've got an important update. Like, let's say you're about to make a major vote in Parliament or something, and you need to have everybody on the WhatsApp group know what to do, or there's something going on where there's a big deal that's about to take place and you're about to list the company and everybody needs to know what the talking points are. These days we use WhatsApp for all of that stuff and for our friends and family, right? So, and an update on Uncle Joe who's in hospital and everybody's waiting with bated breath. So even if it's only out for, I don't know how long it was down for, probably what, 4 hours or so?
A couple of hours.
I didn't check anything before I went to sleep last night, and I thought, okay, cool. But that was because I didn't expect anything important to happen. If you are waiting, I know, if you're waiting for something, then it must have been very, very scary, because you think, oh my God, what am I going to do without WhatsApp?
I thought I was losing my mind, because I had sent a message and it wasn't going through. And I'm like, wait, do I have data? Okay, let's buy data. Like, let's restart the phone. What's going on? Like, I was losing my mind. And then I went on to Twitter and I was like, and then someone's like, hey, is WhatsApp done? I'm like, oh, make it a sense. It like makes sense now. otherwise, I was just going to be panicking and I'm like, yo, what's wrong with my phone? Like, somebody help me.
I personally thought it was quite refreshing. Like, in the same boat, Gareth, I didn't really expect much. You know, I'm not like glued to my phone. My whole life is literally right in front of me all the time. So I was quite chilled, really enjoying myself, not being bothered by stuff. Only when I went onto Twitter did I see that, something's happening.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Had I not gone on, I wouldn't have known, because I'm not on Instagram all the time. I'm not on Facebook all the time. So I thought to myself, this is cool, but for me. But for somebody who's like running a business out there, they're freaking out. For somebody who's waiting at a taxi rank, as you're saying, waiting for directions to get to the next place, they are completely stuck. I felt a little bit privileged to not be addicted to social media or not need it in the way that other people need it, because lucky me, because I enjoyed that few hours of a break. It really served a big purpose. I was able to chill.
For sure.
I gathered my family in front of the TV. I had no reason to be on my phone more than, So it was just interesting, but well, I really felt bad for somebody who needed it.
I mean, out of the three, the only one that I think people really would have been panicky about, because no one's panicky about Instagram or Facebook, right? No one's going, oh my God, what are we going to do?
Don't say that. Influencers need to post. Content needs to go out. That's how you get your money. If you do not post that at 6 o'clock, you don't get paid, hunty. That engagement.
Panicking. Suddenly everybody's posting pictures on Twitter like, okay, seeing as Instagram is down, here you go. I was like, damn.
Well, so I don't have Instagram on this thing. I mean, Twitter on my phone. So I only way I found out that it was down was when I went onto like my browser and I typed in is WhatsApp down? Because that's the only one I was worried about. Yeah, the browser. And it said to me, yeah, there are problems with WhatsApp. But they tried to play it down as well. They were like, no, it's only about 70,000 people who are having trouble. I'm like, no, I think it's more than that.
Everyone, literally everyone.
But I was swearing at my service provider. I was like, ah, you useless son of a bitch. You stupid service provider. I was like, what's going on with you? I knew I should have stuck with that other network.
But you know what was funny was Twitter had tweeted like, hello, literally everyone. And then WhatsApp was like, hi. And then people were like, wait, WhatsApp, what you doing here? Why are you tweeting? Fix your shandies, you know? It's important that you get back online. And that was so hilarious because I think also Facebook jumped onto that. And people were like, no, stop tweeting and fix yourselves. So, yeah, that happened on Twitter as well. People are going on it.
Well, this is ironic. Very funny. This is ironic, and I love this. Apparently, Joe Biden or Bo Jiden declared October Cybersecurity Month. Ha ha ha! could that guy be more useless than he is? I mean, really, Cybersecurity Month, and he can't get it right. It's unbelievable. So there are lots of comments coming in this morning. Get on Twitter, please, Gareth. Not a chance. Not interested.
There's nothing on Twitter for Gareth. I promise would hate it there.
I know people make fun of me when I keep saying that I'm not on Twitter, but you have to remind people because otherwise they go, I mean, I've got an account there, but I don't even have the logins anymore. So I don't use it for anything. I haven't tweeted in almost 2 years and zero have I missed. I feel not,
yeah, I'm not, much.
But the best thing, and you were saying how you felt a little bit privileged yesterday to not have to worry about Instagram or Facebook or WhatsApp. I don't think it would be such a bad thing. Society would be cleaned out a little bit and we'd get our priorities right. If WhatsApp and Instagram and Facebook had to go down for, I don't know, a month or two, I think it would help people.
Yeah.
Help them realign their bullshit, because I really don't think, you know, I don't think it makes that much difference. And sure, there are influencers who depend on that, but that shouldn't be your whole job. If that's your whole job, bit of a problem. So Facebook needs to stop. Oh, this is an interesting point. Facebook needs to stop for 2 weeks to stop the spread of fear and lies.
Agreed.
That's it. Maybe that is true.
No, I think the bigger issue really is that, like, you know, based on all these algorithms that they've got and, you know, how they, our user journey and all the data that they collect about us, they decide what they think works for us. They ultimately, in one or other way, are controlling what we're exposed to. And for the most part, it's a lot of bad. And they're not managing that very well. They really aren't managing that well.
There's also a part of me that wonders whether Zuckerberg didn't do this on purpose, because, you know, he's been grilled quite a lot lately by people in Congress. He's been given a lot of shit for Facebook policies and the way they treat their own people. Apparently, there's a lot of suicide inside of Facebook. Now, I don't mean to, I'm not making fun of the people who obviously are under mental stress there, but it's ironic to me that a company that is spreading mental illness, because that's what it's doing. It's making mental illness worse for so many people all over the world, that they also themselves are feeling the brunt of that. I don't think that that's entirely by mistake. I think that's a direct consequence of the way that they treat their own people and the way that they treat all of us. So he's been taking a lot of heat lately. So I wouldn't be surprised if he just switched it off for a little bit to show people, to remind them how powerful he is. It's the kind of thing that he would do. He's one of those turbo, he's a turbo nerd.
He should do it.
He's a turbo nerd with an ego, and he probably does this kind of thing just to remind everybody, look how powerful I am.
I think he likes money too much. He likes money too much, guys. He switches off Facebook for like 3 hours, and he's lost like 10 billion.
Yeah.
10 billion just in those few hours. I think that's insane.
Well, apparently,
sure, he controls us.
Apparently, on the stock markets, Facebook is down like $50 billion or something, which is small in their, you know, in their overall value. But maybe that's a sign. I don't know. You were saying some people.
No, I'd sign a petition for Facebook to actually get shut down. I don't know why we still have that particular platform. Maybe Instagram, I can still see. WhatsApp, Twitter, sure. But Facebook, it needs to go. It's one of those apps where I'm like, yeah, you serve no purpose and you need to go.
Right. Well, let's see. I mean, you know, it's like, for example, you've got to find the silver lining in every situation. You know, when we were going through that really bad period of load shedding, people were like, well, it's giving me time to speak to my family and be with my friends. And you get people who manage to see the good in everything. I don't know whether we aren't being a bit like that now. Maybe we're trying to see the good in something that's actually quite stupid. Anyway, yeah. He did lose $5 billion yesterday, according to Color. That's so he did lose some money. That's a good thing. He must feel the burn. I just want to quickly point out that Simpiwe has been getting lifts with Homo Lemo to the studio for like a year. How long has it been?
Yeah, it's been almost a year. I was traveling with him to work, and he was waking up very early to make sure that I got to work on time.
Yep.
And I'm glad to announce that, you know, he no longer needs to be my Uber driver.
That's right.
Because a girl has a car now, you know. Woo-hoo. She's independent.
Breaking news. That's what that is. Congrats.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank you, myself, and I.
Congratulations.
It's a sexy little car you've got there, too. She's driving around this very, very, very nice little Mini. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous.
Snazzy.
It's a nice car, that.
Thank you. Mm. Thank you.
How long you had it now?
It's been about a month now.
No, it's longer than that.
I got it like end of August. Yeah. End of August.
Okay.
It's been.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's not going to wear off anytime soon, because when you have been relying on other people, there's nothing more frustrating. But also, if you didn't have a car and then you suddenly get a nice car, that makes such a difference too. Sure. People underestimate
it. Yeah, she was worth the wait, hey?
It's such a thrill. And every time you get in, do you still get a little yay?
I pinch myself. Sometimes I'm like, wait, is this my car? Oh, wait, I'm an adult now. I need to really worry about petrol. Ooh, and then like when my number plates came, because I got it straight from the dealership. So when I was driving, I was like, ooh, don't care about the speed limit, like living my best life. And then I got my number plates and I'm like, oh, shucks, now we have to drive at 60. That's going to be tricky, but okay. let's try this. Let's be responsible. But yeah.
And while we're doing updates, Lebang also has an update on her high school reunion. How did that go?
Oh, it actually went really, really well. I told you guys I was like super, super nervous to be there, but I ended up being one of the last people to leave. I caught up with like all my old sports coaches. I caught up with all of my old boarding house masters, and they actually asked me to come back and like have like a talk with some of like the younger black girls in the school, because apparently they've been really, really struggling. I'm like, dude, I'm the person for this. So hopefully if everything goes well, every couple of months I'll be going back to my old high school just to touch base, because there's like a big disconnect between like some of the teachers and the students. And, you know, having been, you know, somebody who's gone through the school, I guess they feel like me and my friends can really ease that transition for some of the girls that feel a bit displaced. So it was really, really good. Positive.
That's so nice. You know, that people go to the trouble that they do in situations like this for other people. You know, a lot of schools, I mean, I don't think my school gave a shit if any of us were disconnected when we were there. And like, you know, I think you could find these problems if you look. But for so many kids, if you can smooth the path for them a little bit to make it a bit easier for them to overcome some of those kind of general obstacles, I think that's a nice thing to do. And if you can also get girls who've been through the school to share their experiences, that probably helps, because then people go, oh, it's not just the teachers bullshitting us, you know?
Yeah, definitely. The bigger thing was that, like, there was almost like some huge lawsuits and stuff that they went through that
from the black girls?
Yeah.
Like, what are these black girls doing?
Why? What was going on?
They just don't feel like they are completely understood, right? And this is in 2021. So in my year, 2007, there's a couple of girls that also didn't feel like understood. So the teachers were almost surprised that, shit, this has actually been happening for years. It's not just a 2021 thing. It's not new. So
yeah, but what is it? I mean, like, what do they feel? They need to be treated differently? Is this like a... Is it genuinely like there's a problem, or is it because these girls are now like they're looking for attention? Because that does happen at high school.
Yes, that does happen. But the thing is with my school is that there was like a range, right, of different black girls. So we've got the black girls that come from rich families that are snobbish, that, you know, they've maybe even gone to the primary school, so they sorted. Then there's the black girls that come through a scholarship who are from the township. Every single day, they have to leave their life and their home and come into this bubble that's this fancy school. And then when they go back to the township, they also mistreated there because it's like, you don't belong here, blah, blah. So there's a lot of like psychological effects that had on, especially the girls that came through scholarships. So the teachers are realizing now that this thing has been ongoing and they should definitely give it more attention. So, the conversations that happened on Saturday was exactly that. Like, can you guys come back and maybe speak to the girls? And I'm like, sure. I mean, I'm happy to send you guys an invoice and let's get cracking. I was like, let's do this,
secure the bag by all means. I love it. I love to see it.
What's the story with the people that you were at school with? Are there any that you were surprised to see? Any that have gone forwards, gone backwards? Any that you're impressed with?
What was scary, guys, what was so scary was that every single person that I spoke to was like, oh my God, Lebang, hi. So are you still in South Africa? I sat there. I was like, damn. I realized everybody around me left high school and immediately went overseas. Immediately. Hmm. The one girl went straight to Harvard. The other one went straight to the Netherlands. The other one went straight to the everyone. I sat there. I'm like, you know, Mpumalanga is great, girl. Have you been to Durban? It was so sad.
But don't you think that's a rich school thing, is that people want to be able to boast that they went overseas. I mean, I didn't have a gap year after school. I don't know about you guys, but that was never on offer for me. And if I'd even suggested it, my parents would have laughed me out of the room. You talk about, like, no one would have given me a special class on like, oh, shame. So your parents didn't send you on a gap year and you didn't get to fuck around for a whole year. There was none of that. It was like, go out there and work.
Yeah, no.
Go find something to do.
No. Reality, go out there and just work or do something, be busy. So having to sit there and realize that, yes, it's like, that's all I did immediately after high school. I just went boom, you know, it was interesting. Not everybody pitched, thank God.
But it's also it's a boast thing. It's like, I spent 3 years in Holland and, you know, I found myself. It's like, oh God, are you so self-absorbed that you had to spend 3 years trying to find yourself? You know how I found myself? I found myself by waking up at 3 a.m. and going to produce a morning show for a grumpy man for like a year and a half. And then being paid just enough to make the petrol money work. That's how I found myself. Yeah. I had plenty of time on those early morning trips on the highway when no one else was awake. I had lots of time to find myself. I didn't need to be in Amsterdam taking drugs.
Come on. Honestly, like at some point, this is all just bollocks. Can we all agree? But
exactly. But anyway, bullshit.
Like, just sitting there realizing that like some of us really live like real lives versus this Popeye-ness that happens of like floating in the sky and just running off to Harvard and then not feeling like it. So then going to the Netherlands and not feeling like it. So I'll just move back to Cape Town. I sat there and I was like, whoa, this is quite bizarre.
Have you noticed something else? Like I have been having conversations with people recently. When they feel that their life is a bit boring, they immediately start thinking about moving somewhere. They think that's going to change their life. Or not, let's not say boring. Let's say their life isn't very challenging or they feel dissatisfied about some part of it. Yeah. First thing they start saying is, I think it's time for me to move to here or to move to there. And you go, really?
And the environment is not the problem. The problem is in here. It's inside. But especially, the problem's going to come out.
Look how we're doing this show now. I mean, you could be in Amsterdam. You could be in Timbuktu. You could be in Hong Kong right now. Wouldn't make any difference, right? We're living in a world which is so interconnected now. And most of the jobs that you can do online, and there's some jobs you can't, obviously, you can do from anywhere. So how do you think that's going to change your life? How do you think your whole world is going to suddenly come right just because you've changed your geographical position? People are full of shit. They really are. Such nonsense. That stuff drives me crazy. It's an excuse.
You need to give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, some people, the minute they change their environments, they'll change their friends. They change where they stay. It's like different things. I mean, some people have a very good, like, if you throw them in the deep end, they're going to swim. They're going to thrive. And when you get a bit too comfortable in a certain place, you realize that this is my ceiling and I know I can do better, but it's not here. And maybe if I throw myself in the deep end somewhere else, I can thrive and be better and push myself to, you know, be more disciplined or do X, Y, Z. In that regard, I think.
I don't know.
There's
I
a bit of, you know, truth in change your environment.
Sure, but if you can't conquer your current space or do your best in your current space, you're not going to be able to do that in an even more foreign space. And that's just kind of what it is.
Agreed.
But what if my space is toxic? You know, I want a safe space. I want to feel safe in, you know, whatever space I'm in. And if I realize and I, you know, realize that this space is toxic, I need to remove myself out of that toxic environment.
But those
and place myself in somewhere that's,
I get you,
know,
but those are not the people we're talking about. We're talking about those people who are trying to find an excuse for why things are not going right in their life. You sound like if you made the decision like you're going to move because you're not happy and things are not going well and you do it, different story. But these people who talk about doing it because they don't feel like anything's going on in their life and they feel like underachievers and they never do it. Those people I don't want to hear from. I'm not interested in their stories. Yeah. And we discussed those safe spaces yesterday, Simpiwe, as you know. So Steph asks a question here, which I have an easy answer for. And it's going to sound ridiculous, but I promise you this is something I used to think I'd always wanted to do. But now, not a chance. Steph says, where is it? Because these questions and comments are coming in so quickly. Steph says, so if you have the opportunity to go to Harvard, you wouldn't take it. And my answer is a flat no. And I'll tell you why. Because I don't believe that institutions like Harvard, Yale, Columbia, even Stanford, Oxford, Cambridge, I don't believe that they are places of learning anymore. I think they're places now of indoctrination. And I also feel that they are charging like a wounded buffalo. They're basically get-rich-quick schemes for people in academia. They charge people an absolute fortune. There is no way that a degree from any university should cost the hundreds of thousands of dollars that it costs from Harvard or Yale. What it's become is credentialism. It's become, I've got this piece of paper from X institution that makes me feel like I deserve Y or Z job. And people are trading on this credentialism, and it is damaging because you end up with student debt. I mean, unless you are super rich, in which case it's meant to give you an easy ride into a law firm or a family office or something that you're already destined for because it's family money. And you're just going to get this piece of paper so you can convince the rest of your family you've done some work. But you haven't really. You've just spent a couple of years fucking around on a campus that has a reputation. And I'll tell you, I used to think for me, it would be the best thing to go and study, you know, a master's degree or to do a doctorate at one of these universities. I honestly would dissuade any parent from putting that on the priority list for their kids. Get your kid a solid education and get them some character and personality. Put them in a job where they have a bit of a difficult time learning about the real world. Yeah. Because those degrees are overvalued. They're overpriced. And I don't think they do you any good anymore. Honest to God, I'm not trying to be otherwise about this. There is no way I would go and do that and waste my time and money now.
I really think it's safe to say that like schools like that are a little bit out of place in terms of where we are in the yeah. world right now. Is there still room for places like Harvard and Stanford? I think it worked very well in the past however many hundreds of years that they've been running, and they've built this nice society of small, you know, rich people, and only we run yeah. the world, and we so turn it's a, out this kind
it's,
of
it's a way of establishing elites. That's what it is. And let me tell you, those elites are so hated in the world right now that if you tell people you have a degree in Harvard, it can go one of two ways. They'll either be the kind of person who goes, oh my God, that's amazing. And they just assume you're clever. I mean, I interviewed a woman from Harvard last week and she was fucking useless. I'm going to be playing the interview for you this week. No, I can't wait for you to hear it, because she was a perfect illustration of why you should not study law at Harvard. And you're going to hate me for it, but especially if you have studied law at Harvard, can't wait for you to hear it. And for those people who know it's a bullshit story, you're going to love this interview. It's coming up. I'll tell you when it's ready. Then you get the other group of people who will say immediately, oh, so you went to Harvard, so you're one of those people. Ah, not interested in you. That's what you're going to get.
No, it's as you're saying, you can be like such a huge idiot, but as long as you went to Harvard, that automatically you know, makes you absolved. More important than the person next to you. And that is the issue. The issue is, you can be the biggest dumbass on the planet, but because you went to, you know, a certain type of school, that is the matter. Well, so these schools for me are just irrelevant, becoming more and more irrelevant. And the sooner we chuck them out, the better.
For those people who think Lebang's talking nonsense, I can promise you that it is very, very easy for stupid people to get degrees at these institutions if their uncle donates, you know, $1 million to a new art wing. Or a new library, or a new auditorium for the place. It's very easy for them to suddenly make their marks a little more acceptable. And if you look at the kind of money that these institutions have in the bank, because all their alumni come back and give them money, right? So a university like Stanford or Yale have so much cash in the bank, so much money. It is just absolutely terrifying. They've got they've got savings and honorariums and investments. They obviously run like investment companies too, of billions. And don't tell me that if you are a rich kid who's not particularly smart and your relative pays for you to go to one of these places, they can't make it look like you did okay just so that you'll be acceptable to the family. That's exactly what they do in many of these situations. And therefore, I just don't think that they're as valuable as they once were. Don't get me wrong. I think they've still got a place. And there are certain degrees that are hugely valuable at these institutions, but they're not the ones that the dummies are studying. So just get ready for it. Anyway, there's also, you can't be educated out of douchebaggery. That's correct. Jared says, my degrees meant nothing for my career. My company didn't even look at it. An apprenticeship is the best way to get into any technically inclined industry. I think that's right. Certainly, these degrees have always historically had huge value, but they're still trading on that. George W. Bush finished off at Yale. They're all a bunch of pirates. Well, you see, I mean, George W. Bush. So obviously we know what happened there. You know, it's like family money, family connections.
That's it. And Gareth, please don't downplay what you're saying. That whole idea of like the old girls and the old boys, the alumni pumping money back into school is so real. Every single bench, that family, every wall was brought to you by this family. I was walking around my school on Saturday like, oh, the Williams family, the what family. Mm-hmm. I even confronted one of my old teachers and I said to her, what would you think it would take for example, you know, like the Kosanas to have left some sort of legacy here? I'm yet to see like any sort of, it's always like the same kind of, you know, that building was dedicated by the Kumfnamas. It's just like, listen, a lot's going on here.
Yeah, but look, I understand, and we need people like that, but it's often these dads who've, you know, they were the captain of the rugby team, and then, you know, 20 years later, their son is the captain of the rugby team. So they go, oh, well, this is our glory moment. This is where our family excelled the most. So we're going to pay for a stained glass window in the chapel. Great. That's good. I don't have a problem with that. It's absolutely fine. Because thank God those people are adding value wherever they go. And you're allowed to do whatever you want with your money. But don't expect all of us to assume that your child is smart just because they got a degree that you helped pay for. And by pay for, I don't mean the fees. I mean all the other stuff. So good for those people. Do your thing. We need good people in the world who are putting money back into these institutions so that people like all of us can enjoy them and learn from them. But I do think that they've lost their way. Education is a bit of a mess at the moment, and it's all because it's being run top down rather than bottom up. Just saying. Learn to read, write, do arithmetic, and then from there on, it's totally up to the kid in question. And any credentials, some of us care about them, some of us don't. You've got to figure out which one you're in.
Yep.
You can see which of our broadcasters, news broadcasters, are impressed with Oxford by the way that they say the word time instead of time. I presume you mean thyme.
The spice.
Yeah, the spice thyme. Yeah.
The herb.
Anyway. The herb. Lebang, will you take your kids to the school that you went to, says Snay.
I'm very, very glad that you asked me this, because this is exactly what I said to my old boarding house master. I said, in the condition that the school is in, I have no interest in bringing my daughters here. And the reason is, number one, I can't afford it.
Yeah.
I told it to her face. Number one, I can't afford it. Mm-hmm. Number two, I really think that I want my children to be in a school that kind of allows them to have freedom to make their own decisions, not really to sort of like be boxed and sort of have to take a certain direction with their lives. My daughters are not going to do well there, because I don't think I excelled in the way that I could have there, because I had to do this or I had to do that. I'm yet to find the right school for my kids. I'm still searching for it. I haven't found it yet, but when I do, I will let you know.
Well, at least you were honest enough to admit like you can't afford it up front, because that also for many people is the deciding factor, right? I mean, that's the most important thing.
It's too expensive.
All right, lots to talk about and lots of things to get to this morning. Among other things, we've got African Analysis with JJ Cornish a little bit later on. That's always good value and something that I know lots of people look forward to. We've got Dr. Mark. Remember yesterday we spoke about how men getting older, are they going to be able to keep it up? Well, I thought, why not get our expert on? Mm. And we'll also get Simpiwe and Lebang to ask him a few questions about this so we can understand it from a woman's point of view. So we'll talk about all kinds of things. The Tea Health Show, which you may have been listening to when we were speaking to Leanne about her relationship with an older man who couldn't get it up. And we'll speak about all of that and more with Dr. Mark a little bit later on. That's just after 7 this morning. This Is Us returns for a triumphant episode today. We're going to be joined by Yatish Nasi alongside Lebang. And we're going to be talking about some of the stories that are going on that everybody's talking about at the moment. So that's all coming up in This Is Us a little bit later on. A couple of news stories we need to be paying attention to as well today. So let's start with this one. I love William Shatner's apparently going into space. Jeff Bezos has decided he needs to send William Shatner into space. They're going to be blasting him off from Texas on the 12th of October. He's aged 90, William Shatner. He's 90 years old. And he will become the oldest person to have flown into space. And for many people, because he was Captain Kirk in Star Trek, this is a very poignant moment, especially if you're a Star Trek fan, which I don't think I really am. Anyway, he says, I've heard about space for a long time now. I'm taking the opportunity to see it for myself. What a miracle, Shatner said in a statement. He will be joining three other people aboard Blue Origin's New Shepard rocket for the company's second human spaceflight. Amazon founder Jeff Bezos joined the first crewed flight in July, along with his brother, an 82-year-old pioneer of space race, and 18-year-old student. So they're trying to mix it up, and I think this is fun. Let's see William Shatner go to space. Are you?
I'm actually tired. 90.
Yeah.
Aren't you just tired? Like, just sort of rest.
It'll be great there's no way a 90-year-old would have been able to go into space before Bezos and, you know. And all these other billionaires, Virgins, Richard Branson, and, you know, Elon Musk. Before these guys decided to do this stuff, there's no way that a 90-year-old would ever have been able to see space. And frankly, at 90 years old, what do you want to put on your tombstone that he hasn't already? Like, William Shatner's done a whole bunch of stuff. He's even sung terrible songs. He's been a TV star. He's He's been the voice of so many things. Let him go and do it. I think it's great. And who the hell are we? If you say, oh, no, we're wasting that space on this old man, William Shatner. Well, it's probably because you're jealous that they didn't choose you. And why would they choose you? Because nobody knows who you are. Everybody knows who William Shatner is.
But you're also never too old to do things. Like, just because he's 90 doesn't mean you must now stop yourself from enjoying life and doing things that you couldn't have done when you were like 24 or 30. Like, that's the beauty about being alive. You are never too old to live your best life.
Absolutely. And I just hope he doesn't die in space, because that would be very difficult for him to...
do you see what, like, that's where my mind is. Like, he's tired. He's fragile. Like, he's done so much. Now he must go to space. The pressure, like, right, physically, he must sit there and be happy at the age of 90. He's going to pass out immediately. God forbid.
Well, Herman Mashaba's Action SA is heading to court to challenge the Electoral Commission, and they've made a decision to not include the party's name in the ballot paper for the local government elections. Action SA announced on Monday that the IEC had failed to meet its 10 a.m. deadline to remedy the situation, so they're taking them to court. Now, why did this happen? Apparently, Action SA said it concluded a meeting with its legal team, who were bewildered by the IEC's refusal to remedy the issue and affirmed its position there was no legal basis for the commission to refuse the request. So this is obviously very bad news for Action SA, and they're going to try and sort this out. You've got little over a month to get your campaigning in order. In fact, it's less than a month now. You've got 25 days before we go to the polls. So TikTok, guys, that's all I'm going to say. TikTok, you've got to move faster here.
And not the app.
No, not the app. Bafana Bafana, does anyone actually want to watch Bafana Bafana? But they've just announced that there is a possible return to FNB Stadium if people are vaccinated. So the return of spectators to Bafana Bafana games has edged closer after SAFA revealed that the Minister of Health has welcomed their recommendation for their attendance. This is obviously good news. Even if it's not Bafana Bafana, you've got to watch, but sporting events will be opened again. SAFA president Danny Yordan, I can't believe he's still SAFA president. That is probably one of the most crooked organizations in the world. And he's still,
believe it,
he's still president. This Danny Yordan, I mean, what trouble has he not been in over the last 10 years? But he's still president of SAFA. It's unbelievable how some people get away with murder. Literally. I mean, it's just crazy. He announced that this is the plan. He wants vaccinated fans to be granted entry to the FNB Stadium for our 2022 World Cup qualifier, which is on the 12th of October. That's just around the corner too. So again, TikTok, Danny. And Joe Patla, the Minister of Defense, who has to make that call. I mean, Minister of Health, who has to make that call.
Can I just say something?
Yes.
Like, with regards to Bafana Bafana, could they not choose like another team? Like maybe, you know, the cricket team, the rugby team. I feel like they do way better in sports than Bafana Bafana.
No,
and it's easier
to
convince people, to say, hey, get vaccinated. Let's enjoy a game. Let's watch it live. Humunati. Now Bafana Bafana, I feel even demotivated. I'm just like, chief.
I'm with you. I'm with you. I don't see the value here for fans. Anyway, here's some bad news, I'm afraid. I have to give it to you. Can't lie. Petrol price is expected to come down slightly on Wednesday, so that's not the bad news. The bad news is diesel users can expect to pay quite a lot more for fuel. The Department of Mineral Resources and Energy issued fuel adjustment prices for October. So petrol, a 4 cents per liter decrease. Diesel is a 22.8 cents a liter increase suddenly. Don't ask me why. They say that the reasons are the increase in Brent crude oil and petroleum product prices. Information has been cited from the Energy Information Administration. I didn't even know we had one of those. The crude oil inventories in the U.S. are below their five-year average this time of year. Additionally, there's a natural gas crunch in Europe, which could spill over to other countries and lead to higher oil prices. So the department also considered the impact of rand appreciation and the implementation of a state levy. Ah, here we go. Ah, okay. It's all about the government taking more money out of it. That's it.
Now
it makes sense. There we are. Okay. So look out for that, especially if you're a diesel car driver. In October, you're going to be paying more for fuel. So get ready.
But It's okay, it's not bad. Like, I literally chose diesel, so I don't have to deal with the constant up and down of petrol. So it's cool because we don't usually get hit like this. So it's fine. Thank you.
Are you happy
We'll
with
be
that?
right.
Okay. All
I'm
right.
cool with it. Yeah, I'm
What?
fine.
You know, as someone who's like now paying attention to the petrol prices, I'm glad it's going down. You know, that full tank is now going to cost a little bit less this month. So I'm glad.
Simpiwe was not paying attention to any of this while she was driving Khomolema's car. It didn't matter.
Yeah,
no,
When she was a
none of
passenger,
it
yeah,
mattered.
it was all good.
No, it's my car. I'm like, what? Wait, 4 cents. That's a lot, guys. That's a lot. Thank you. I'm happy. Wednesday marked. Okay.
All right, so are you ready for a little African analysis this morning?
Yes, please.
All right. Let's
Yes.
get hold of JJ Cornish, who joins us now for a little catch up. We do this every now and then from the Johannesburg Business School, and we have a look at what's happening on the African continent. And today we're going to talk about the Sudan. Good morning, JJ. How are you? Simpiwe, will you see if you can figure out what's going on over there for me, please? I just want to see whether we can get hold of him. In the meantime, I just want to quickly tell you what else is coming up a little bit later on. We have, as I mentioned, Dr. Mark from the T Health Show, and he's going to be joining us to talk about all the stuff that's coming up with them. We've got so many opportunities for you to ask questions too. You know, like we do with Dr. Hanan, where we allow people to bring their own issues to the fore and we will address them. And if you want to be anonymous, you can be anonymous. So obviously, we want to talk about all the stuff.
Yeah.
And we want to hear from you. So let us know what's going on over there. Let's see if we can
Like,
get him on.
let's do it. Let's do it.
JJ, how are you? There we are. There.
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Nice to see you.
Can you hear me now?
Loud and clear. Yes,
Yeah.
very good.
Yes, lovely. Yeah. Yes.
There we
I'm
are.
doing this on my phone because my vast array of computer screens is not working today. Like my stretch limo wouldn't start this morning when I tried to take them to the tech. Don't let me get into my moments of fantasy. But nice to hear you all.
Nice to see you, JJ. You were obviously also hit by the WhatsApp outage last night, which seems to have made some people very, very nervous for a very short time. So, JJ, today we're talking.
It did. I got up really early to do this
Yeah.
because I'm in the Cape, where all
Oh.
Gautengers who've been careless are not living.
Yes.
I'm in Cape Town, and suddenly, as I say, my computer didn't work. So I'm doing this on my telephone, which is why my background is half a ceiling and half a studio portrait given to me by my hotel.
Very
But
good.
anyway, let's go on with things. I'm going to talk to you about Sudan today, which is a vastly interesting country.
Right, so tell us about Sudan because I don't really know a huge amount about it other than it's been very messy since about the, I don't know, that, well, since the dawn of time, really, because it used to be the place that the ancient Egyptians used to torment. And that was thousands of years ago. It's had a very checkered history. And most recently, it's split up into the South Sudan and Sudan itself. They've also got problems there because there are ethnic issues. There are things going on in Darfur, which we've heard about in the news in terms of refugee camps and people being treated very badly. But give us an overview with your own experience, because I have no doubt that you know more about Sudan than any of us.
Well, I've been there, and it is a very interesting place, hugely interesting. Sudan was the largest African country, and in 1956, when it ended the rule by Egypt and Britain together, it began a civil war, one of the longest civil wars in Africa, between the north and the south. Now, when you say this rather irritates Sudanese because the south were mostly Christian, animist, and effectively black Africans.
Yes.
The north were mostly sort of Arab. And when you talk about Arabic Sudanese, they say, we're all Africans, you know, we're all together in this. The fact is, 1.5 million people died in that very long, at least in two batches, the Civil War. 1.5 million people died, and 5 million people were displaced.
Sure.
Eventually, the African Union, which had stood by colonial boundaries. They had to do this. They believed in order, the Organization of African Unity, its predecessor certainly, believed that it's the only way of avoiding absolute confusion. So they made this exception in allowing the South Sudanese to vote, and indeed they voted to secede. So the South Sudanese, this was in 2011, when they seceded, they got most of the oil.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, though, that you cannot get the oil out of South Sudan unless it goes through Sudan. Mm-hmm. So the Sudanese have retained an element of control over it. Now, the Sudanese were run by Omar al-Bashir for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
and he was overthrown by a public disorder, effectively, public demonstrations in 2019. And he's currently serving a term in prison, a sort of country club jail, it has to be said. But whether he gets handed over to the International Criminal Court is now a moot, because they want him. They have indicted him for war crimes in Darfur, again, a place right. where millions were killed, in and that's in the western province. Now, I've been to Darfur a couple of times, too. And to see the way people live there is just it's absolutely parlous. But the way they try to suppress the Darfurians, who believe that they had been marginalized, this is always the case.
Mm-hmm.
There's currently another situation with people being they've been marginalized, and they have actually blocked off Port Sudan, so that fuel, medicine, wheat is not getting in, and then it's going to be a dire situation.
No, JJ,
so
sorry.
We have a country that has more than its share of problems. But I haven't finished on Darfur. They tried to secede. They haven't done so. They've set up a deal. South African troops were among the peacekeepers there, and certainly Thabo Mbeki, as president, was among the people trying to mediate a deal there. But in the suppression was so severe that the International Criminal Court has indicted Omar al-Bashir, then president, for war crimes. And that was what caused the problem when Omar al-Bashir arrived in South Africa for an AU summit.
Mm-hmm.
You'll remember that a couple of years back, where he was spirited out before the International Court's order. And a South African court order resulting from that could have him held. The order of anybody who is signatory to the International Criminal Court is bound by law to hold somebody wanted and turn him over to the criminal court.
So you mentioned Port Sudan, and I actually had to check a map myself, because somewhere in my head I've always thought, well, Sudan is this huge desert of a country. I mean, the south of Sudan, now a separate country, is actually not like that at all. It's quite well forested, and it's got completely different climate and a completely different ecosystem. But they do also have a strip of coastline along the Red Sea, and that's obviously where Port Sudan is. But the capital, Khartoum, that's an interesting place too, isn't it?
You know, it's really to answer that question about the diversity. It's one of the most geographically diverse countries in Africa.
It's also the second biggest country in Africa, right? I think it's either the second or the third biggest country in South Africa. In Africa,
it's now the third. It was the largest before South Sudan seceded,
right.
And now it falls behind
Algeria and the DRC.
Algeria is literally twice the size of South Africa. Sudan also has a population less than South Africa, as do all the, well, except to the DRC. But yeah, so it's number three. Now, Khartoum, and then there's the sort of a mirror city just across the Nile, Omdurman. Khartoum is the place where the Blue Nile and the White Nile converge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you take a boat, a small boat along that thing, you literally see a line in the water, and the two Niles are different colors, likely. But then they move up, and then obviously into Egypt. And Port Sudan is up the way, up the Nile River there. But, you know, I remember walking around Khartoum, and there was this beautiful hotel, and I thought I'll pop in there. I didn't think for a moment I'd get a beer or a scotch or anything.
Yeah.
I thought I'd go and sit there and have a cup of tea and look at the river roll by. And I walked in and somebody said, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm a visitor and I'm wanting to have a cup of tea. And they said, you'll never get that here at the headquarters of the Chinese Africa Oil Company.
is that what's going on?
And that's, I mean, virtually every drop of oil that Sudan was producing at that time, I don't know if it still is the case, was going straight to China, straight to China. And I'm sure that a lot of it still does. It's a big city. And it's, of course, just where the hotel I was looking at was just a few hundred meters from where Gordon of Khartoum in 1885 was besieged and then beheaded, a very famous part of British colonial history.
Yeah.
But Gordon of Khartoum. There's museums that are very interesting. And you can go and we used to be able to look at parts of the presidency, you know, that were open to the public. At the moment, Sudan is run by a transitional group because after the fall of Omar al-Bashir, the people took to the streets and the army put them down very vigorously and very cruelly until finally a peace was made and they have the freedom. They call it the transitional body, justice and equality movement, and the Sudanese liberation movement, the two of them filling in this federal group. They've now split. The rebels have now split as though the country doesn't have troubles enough. But the military and the civilians are ruling the country in league. And then, of course, what happened was last month they had an attempted coup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that attempted coup was put down. They believe it was some Bashir loyalists who were responsible for that, as were some of the disaffected military, but it was a combination of the two. And it mirrors really, Gareth, the problems in the Horn of Africa.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, Sudan is involved very much in what is happening in Ethiopia, wants to mediate. I suppose, you know, the Ethiopians have a point that perhaps if you've got your own problems sorted out, you might be in a better position to mediate here. And, of course, Sudan is part of the riparian, the riparian countries, mostly with Egypt and Sudan, who are objecting to the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, which you and I are perfectly permitted to call the GERD, eh?
Right.
And so it's part of that. So it's essentially, it's pivotal in what is happening in the Horn of Africa. And the troubles it's going through now, again, Port Sudan being blockaded by this group, tribal group who believe they've been marginalized, with Darfur never fully settled, with the international community. There were years when the international community boycotted and blockaded Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
So they come in, and of course it was from that United States terrorist. It's come off that. So, you know, things should be looking up. But every time it takes a faltering couple of steps forward, it takes a very tragic couple of steps backwards either.
Yeah, not the most stable place in the world. So what are their major exports? What do they do? I mean, how's their economy basis? What's their economy based on? Sorry.
Well, of course, oil, moving oil from South Sudan. It was a very oil-based economy. And there's a good bit of, a great deal of agriculture and herding, that sort of thing. So they sell food to Egypt and they sell food to the neighboring countries. You know, it has Chad, Chad, Central African Republic, Libya, and Egypt has made main neighbors, and it sells food to all of them. But again, when they have these problems, there's a fair bit of manufacturing, and then, of course, crafts and that kind of thing. There's a lot of cottage industry there. And that all sorts around Omdurman and Khartoum. Interestingly, Sudan has more pyramids than Egypt, quite a few more.
Really?
So it's all part of the ancient Nile kingdom. So when you go to visit Sudan, they with great pride take you to show you streams and streams of pyramids, not all the size of the great pyramid of Giza. But nevertheless, they have many more pyramids than Egypt has.
It's pretty amazing stuff. Well, thank you so much, JJ. Very, very good to have you on. And as always, fascinating from Sudan to the next one. We've spoken about Eritrea, Ethiopia. We've spoken a little bit about Nigeria. I wonder who should be next on our agenda. Are there any countries in Africa that you really desperately want to go to, especially now as travel opens up again, that you haven't yet gone to?
I want to visit the West more, you know, the Francophone countries. Mm. And the country that I'd like to look at in detail is Senegal, because it's a country that, I mean, I think disappointingly falls in with France, you know, sort of lockstep with France in terms of the Western Sahara,
yes,
which is, you know, my passion. And so they don't take a sympathetic line to the Western Sahara. But it also is a country which, in terms of morality, punches way above its weight in the way we did shortly after democracy arrived here.
Right.
So it's a small country. It's population is low. It's not a rich country. But when it speaks, certainly in Europe and at the United Nations, people sit up and listen. So it has a history of struggle, an honorable one, and I'd like to see why it has that influence in Africa.
Very good. Well, JJ, that's all we got time for this morning, but thanks again for your time. This is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, and you can find out more about the continent that we inhabit, the continent where we have all our neighbors, and what those neighbors are all about. Today was all about Sudan. Thank you, JJ. Nice to see you. There we are. Au revoir. All right. Some useful and interesting information there. Lots of things to talk about. Yeah, and China really are everywhere on this continent at the moment. Lots of comments about that. Sudan, according to Michael, has an interesting music scene. Their music is worth exploring. That's interesting, too. And as far as Senegal goes, Robin says nice waves in Senegal. Okay, so Robin, I assume you've been there. And I assume you've been surfing there.
Waves, like energy, like vibes, like hippie style, or like... Beautifully, like visually, the waves in the water look good.
I assume she means for surfing. That's what I'm going to guess. That's what I'm going to go for.
Okay.
All right. When we come back, we got Dr. Mark from the T Health Show. And by the way, if you have any questions for Dr. Mark, we want to hear about those. So let us know what questions you'd like him to answer. You can do that by sending us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com. That's contact at cliffcentral.com. All of that and more on the way.
Cliffcentral.com.